calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the stars. And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman and co-host, and with me today will be Andrew Beck and Max Cohen, as this is another edition of the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, which is a show with the writers from Cottagers Confidential. In this episode, we'll be discussing many topics, but as you can imagine, we will be start the show by talking about Ross McCormack. We will be doing that, and we actually have a special guest who will be joining us shortly. That is Will Paul from Viva El Fulm. He actually wrote a very interesting article about McCormack, and we will be discussing that to start the show. But before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, the editor for Cottagers Confidential, Mr. Andrew Beck. How you doing?
Doing really good. It's good to be here.
It's great to be here. I want to mention this, that Andrew actually did an excellent podcast. It was the Championship Roundtable that I actually posted on the Cottage Talk website. Please do check that out. It's with some writers around the championship. I highly recommend it. Andrew, before I bring on Max, I just want to tell you, you did a phenomenal job.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it was a very interesting show, and what's interesting is that I'm actually going to be interviewing the host of that show tomorrow. I'm going to do a one-on-one with him because he is a Newcastle blogger, so he will be coming on with me to give us his view on Newcastle. That should be good. It looks like we have Max online. I'm going to bring him on. Max is actually traveling. He's in Canada. So how are you doing there, Max?
I'm doing great, Ross. It's always an honor to be on the podcast. Hopefully, I'll stay with you guys for the whole show.
Hopefully you will, my friend. Hopefully you will. Okay, and like I mentioned, I'm going to bring on Will in just a few minutes. But before I do, he's just holding. I just want to get your thoughts. Obviously, we had the breaking news early this morning that Fulham had accepted a bid from Aston Villa for the services of Ross McCormack. So before we go into Will's article, and like I said, I'm going to bring him on the line. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts when you saw the news?
I'm kind of surprised at how much money is being reportedly that they're getting for him. I mean, that when a guy's 29, has never played above the championship, and people thought we overpaid for him when we spent like £11 million for him, and now they're talking about turning a profit on him when he's 29. That's just – I don't know how – especially a guy who has gotten three new contracts in 2 years and obviously wants to go. I don't think you can really complain about that. The question will be, do they use the money in a way that makes us happy, or do they just kind of sit on it?
And I think that's the fear of so many Fulham supporters. There's actually some very interesting speculation that's circling around on Twitter, and hopefully we will get to that during the show. I'll share what I've learned. Again, I actually have an article from Lyle Thomas that I'll share in a little bit, because there's some interesting speculation about an attacking midfielder, central midfielder, that could potentially be coming to Fulham from Spain. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But before we do that, Max, I want to get your thoughts about the McCormack situation. Were you surprised when you woke up this morning to the news?
I really wasn't surprised, because McCormack has been linked with a move away for 6 months now. I remember last January it was Middlesbrough, now it's Villa. But I think it is really good business, because it boils down to the fact, if you have a player who wants to leave, there's no doubt he's better off leaving. You don't want to play with the club who doesn't want to be there, because so much of the game is about passion, playing for the club you love. And if you're just there, not really feeling it, not really giving 100%, there's no use having you on the squad. And, of course, Andrew mentioned this, £14 million. That's an amazing amount of money for a player who's really entering the twilight years of his career. So I'd have to say it's a good piece of business by Fulham.
I agree, Max. And like we're talking about, all the Cottagers co-hosts have been talking about this amongst ourselves, and I'm glad that we could talk about this as well. The fear is that they're not going to spend it. I think they're going to spend it. I've seen speculation that already gives me a sign that they're going to spend it. Max, you're Shad Khan, you are Slavisa Jokanovic. How do you spend that money? I'm curious, before I bring Will on.
I think it has to be investing in the defense, because I think Fulham done surprise a lot of people. It's good business in the attack. We signed Sonny Aluka, we signed Florida Ite, and we have Matt Smith. I think the strike force is going to be adequate, but I think to really take Fulham to the next level, we need just another top-quality defender, in my mind.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, I'm just going to put you on hold just for a second. I'm going to bring Will on. Hopefully we'll have a decent connection with Will. Will, before I read an excerpt from your article, just your opening thoughts on when you saw the news about Ross McCormack. I just want to mention Will is an excellent writer. He's a former co-host. It's been a while, but he's at university. So I'm glad to have him back on for a few minutes. And please do check out his article on Viva El Fulm about Ross McCormack. So, Will, just want to get your opening thoughts before I just read an excerpt.
I wasn't totally surprised, to be fair. He's been pushing for the January blues of McCormack trying to, you know, sitting out training and stuff. So it's not surprising. Looking at how he played preseason, I think the only surprising fact is the amount of money we owe the clubs in our position, and you think 8-10 million is a hefty chunk to rebuild a squad of a player. That gamble of sitting there and waiting till we get to 12, rising to 14, as it's been reported, is perhaps. And I mean, another surprising thing too would be the fans' reaction, how quickly they've kind of persuaded themselves it's a good idea. Sure, most people in early May, late April, this would have been literally your worst nightmare. Maneuvering that the fans have done over this. So I think those two aspects are the only thing I'm surprised about. In hindsight, is been coming all summer. So yeah.
Okay, very good, my friend. Just so you know, we're having some technical difficulties with your line. So I'm just going to put you on hold for a second because I want to read an excerpt, and hopefully when I bring you back on, the connection's a little bit better. Sorry about that, but I'm just going to put you on hold for 1 second because I want to read an excerpt from this and then get the thoughts of my two other co-hosts here. And again, this is from his article. And I want to stress that during Will's article, he does mention, you know, don't be fooled. You know, Ross McCormack is going to be a loss. And he describes what Ross offers to Fulham and has offered to Fulham. But beyond that, I want to really get into the part when he really gets into his thoughts about Ross McCormack leaving. He goes, and that is precisely why Ross McCormack leaving should not be the gloom and doom that it should look like on paper. He runs our team, but does so in a certain way. He drops back to get the ball and leaves the other striker isolated up front. He dictates that we only play through him, and Tom Kearney has to be on the wing, and that our midfielders have to be out of position and vulnerable to the counter. But he also scores lots of goals and sets up for our most goal-productive season in recent history. If he stays, then fine, which obviously when he wrote this is before he was about to go. We are guaranteed 20 goals. If he leaves, then it's also fine, as long as we react to it well and build a proper team based on structure, not the single-handed efforts of one man up front. It is all about doors. Where a Ross-shaped door closes, many other ones should open it. Fulham play their cards right. We have significant investment capability. We have instantly more options on the field in how we want to line up and don't have to pigeonhole players in because we're guaranteed goals by him. But we have to take this opportunity. Fulham will have to simply bring in good players on good money and reinvest it to build a squad that is capable of that. It is very true that this could lead us to play more expansive football with stronger defense and doing better than ever. It is also very possible that taking away 20-plus goals and 10 assists sinks us. It is all about how we react. Think about how many teams react when fundamentally important players leave. There are good examples. Atletico Madrid had Falcao, Costa, Aguero, and Forlan leaving in consecutive years. They bounce back each time via good reaction. Then think about how to do it badly or Fulham selling Moussa Dembele in 2012. The point is that losing a player does not define a season. It is the reaction to it that does. And he goes into a little bit more in his article. I highly recommend you reading this article on Viva El Fulham by Will Paul. I'm going to bring Will back on in a second, but I thought he did a very good take. And like he mentions, he gives you both sides. He does mention how much Ross McCormack has offered Fulham and that it will be a loss. So, it's again, it is heavy with how we handle without him, but he does mention what he did offer for him. So before I bring him back on, I'm going to start with you, Andrew. I want to get your thoughts on the article written by by Will Paul in regards to Ross McCormack. What are your thoughts of the excerpt I read?
I agree totally with it. And the one big issue with Ross McCormack is that he's a really talented player, but he is the kind of player who you almost have to build your team around and just kind of let him do whatever he wants to do. As you might know, I'm in Seattle. I'm a Sounders fan, and they've had the same problem this year, kind of with Clint Dempsey, where you just have to let him do what he does and build the team around him. And then if he's injured or he's out or he's not interested, you then have this team that's built in a weird way because it's all predicated on just one player. And that's really not the best way to build a team.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. It's a very interesting situation. I thought the way Will really brought this to everyone's attention with what he wrote is that, you know, it's not about one player. You know, it's not about everything going through one player. It's about a team. And I think that was really the point that he was getting at. I'm not going to bring Max back on the line. Max, what are your thoughts about what I read from Will's article?
Yeah, I'd have to agree completely. I think Will was spot on with his analysis of McCormack because there's no doubt he was Fulham's best player over the past two seasons. The way he creates goals, the way he scores goals is fantastic. But he also does have a lot to be lacking in the area of teamwork, as I mentioned earlier. He can sometimes be a prima donna on the pitch. You know, you mentioned it dropping back, and that creates a lot of tactical problems when a striker always wants to be on the ball and doesn't always play his position. And I remember a couple of matches that I saw where – McCormack just kind of checked out of the game, became frustrated when teammates misplaced passes. It almost reminded me of Dimitar Berbatov when he played for Fulham. And I think it's a not exact situation, but similar, in which a striker, I think McCormack always saw himself as above Fulham. He always thought, I should be in the Premier League, or I should be challenging for promotion. And I think when you offload a player like that, it can only bring benefits when you really get players who want to be at the club, who want to be at the cottage.
Right. Right. It's funny because in Will's article, he actually mentions other talismen we've had, and you mentioned Berbatov, he mentioned Bobby Zamora. So I highly recommend you reading this article, and it's fascinating because, you know, he's basically saying, you know, what's on my mind. He wrote what I've been thinking about. So I'm going to bring Will back on. I want to apologize. You know, again, this is not Will's fault, but we don't have a strong connection, so if Will's connection isn't the greatest, I will drop him from the line. He knows that. But I want to see one last time if I can get Will back on. Will, are you with me?
Yeah,
we're still having a real choppy connection, my friend. Listen, before I let you go, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on, and I'm going to find a better way for you to join us next time. It's been a long time. So I just want to say thank you. Great article, and it's just really a great way for us to start our conversation for the show today. Okay, I couldn't make that up. But, Will, thank you very much. All right, I'm going to drop Will. That was Will Paul, writer for Viva El Fulham. He's also been a co-host for Cottage Talk. Great guy. Unfortunately, we had a bad connection. All right, guys, I'm going to bring you back on individually. First, I'm going to go back to you, Andrew. And before we move on from Ross McCormack, any final thoughts on the situation with him?
No, I just, again, I want to reiterate that it's not a bad piece of business as long as they reinvest the money probably in this window. I think if he goes, you probably need another striker to replace him. You don't necessarily need the same level of striker to replace him because it looks like Slavisa is going to go with more of a 4-2-3-1 where the main striker isn't necessarily a goal scorer, but is more of a guy there for hold-up play. But you probably do need at least one more for depth. And, you know, reinvest the money, maybe buy a defender, definitely buy a central midfielder, and possibly, like, another winger. That's the important thing about this. As long as they spend the money, I'm not going to be that upset.
Okay, very good. I'm going to bring Max on. Max, final thoughts on the Ross McCormack situation. Obviously, we're focusing on what Fulham are going to do with the money. You were talking about defense. Andrew was just talking about striker, central midfield. It's funny because I'm gonna read an excerpt from another article from our friend Lyle Thomas at West London Sport, and also from Sky Sports about some speculation about a potential. And this is potential speculation of a central midfielder. who could be coming to Fulham. So I'll be talking about that in a little bit. But what are your thoughts about central midfielder, striker? I know you mentioned the defense, but I'm curious. Do you think Fulham still have a need for, say, an attacking midfielder that can also play CDM, could also just play as a regular central midfielder?
I think we really do. I've mentioned this beforehand in previous podcasts that we've never really filled the gap that Danny Murphy left. So ideally, I'd love another box-to-box central midfielder. Well, I know we signed Kevin McDonald. That's a good start. But to really challenge for promotion, I do think we need that marquee signing. We have had we do have that money we got from McCormack, and I think it really does need to be invested because we have heard rumors that Sabisa is unhappy with the level of investment and he wants more. And whatever it be, I just think we do need that one marquee signing that really will define this transfer window because we have had a lot of good mid-level signings, you know, Dennis Adoy, Florida Ite, squad players that are definitely going to contribute, but not one that's going to be a McCormack player, a player that really does carry the team and provides a lot.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, just going to put you on hold 1 second. I'm going to go back to you, Andrew, because you got me interested in that this should be a good time to talk about this little piece of speculation, then we'll move on. Again, this just happened. You know, I started to see this about an hour ago, and I'm going to read an article from Lyle Thomas from West London Sport. This is very interesting speculation. It's talking about a central midfielder. Fulham are interested in signing Josebet Sanchez from Spanish club Rayo Vallecano. The 25-year-old attacking midfielder scored 9 goals in 27 appearances as Rayo were relegated from La Liga last season. Josebet, who came through the youth ranks at Sevilla, has a release clause in his contract of around £3.4 million. The Whites are looking for attacking players and were one of several championship clubs interested in Tottenham's Alex Pritchard, who is expected to join Norwich. All right, Andrew, what are your thoughts about this speculation? It sounds like you want a central midfielder, so would this be a positive move for Fulham?
Yeah, I think so a lot because from what I know, he can play box-to-box. He's mainly a central attacking midfielder, but he can also play right-sided attacking midfielder. And if you're going with a 4-2-3-1, you're basically always going to be playing 3 attacking midfielders. And we don't really have anyone who's really great option on the right side right now. So I think he would fit that role. And yeah, like I said, if you're always playing 3, you're going to need 5 or 6 attacking midfielders on your roster all at one time. So that's a definite kind of move. And when I started to see noise about that this morning, that actually got me pretty excited because I don't worry so much about the level of play. When you see guys that maybe you're coming from League 2 in France or some league that you just don't know the quality of. I mean, he played in La Liga, so we know that he can deal with the kind of competition that he's going to see in a league like the Championship.
Right. And I'm going to bring Max on because I want to share some information on this player. Again, this is speculation. Nothing's been done yet, but there's been some strong speculation on Twitter as well. So, Max, I'm going to bring you on because I want to read some information on this player from WhoScored.com because I find it very interesting. I want to get your thoughts on it. This is on Josebet. Okay, here's some characteristics. Strengths, long shots, through balls, finishing. Weaknesses, aerial duels, tackling, style play, likes to layoffs, indirect set-piece threat, does not dive into tackles. He had 16 appearances at attacking midfielder in the central position, defensive midfielder in the central position, 5, and just central midfielder, 3, and then he came on as a substitute for another 3. So is this the type of player that would interest you if Fulham actually do sign Josebet?
I think definitely. He sounds like a good creative player who's going to make a lot of chances for the strikers up top. And I think it's an interesting point that mind back the last 5 years, Fulham have had very few, if any, players from La Liga. During the big Spanish craze in the early 2010s, after the Spain team was dominating, Martin Yol and Mark Hughes were very reluctant to sign players from La Liga. So we were really one of the teams that missed out on that little transfer fad. So I think it would be good to bring in some more creative players. And obviously, another good thing about Jokinovic is he has his contacts in Spain. He's posted on his Twitter and his social media that he was in Spain scouting players. So I think that's another great addition from Jokinovic, that he has that extra knowledge of the Spanish game and can bring that continental flair to Fulham.
Absolutely. And, when I first started hearing about this, I'm thinking, okay, he's not settled at the central midfield position. He's looking to upgrade that. He feels a need there. He did bring in Kevin McDonald, and that's going to lead me to go to you, Max. I'm going to go right back to you because I want to talk about that signing. We have not talked about that signing. I'm talking about on the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. So where do you see the role of Kevin McDonald?
I see him as, in my mind, a similar player to Ryan Tunnicliffe in that he's a big center midfielder presence. However, does he have enough flair to go in the attacking sense? Probably not, but I think he's better suited to the central defensive midfield position. And you have players like you're talking about Josebed or others to fill in the more attacking side of the game. So I think he can be a good defensive rock protecting the back four. And people forget that the central midfielders make a big difference in how your defense plays. And that if you have a good, solid central defensive midfielder, clean sheets are a lot easier to come by, and your defense is going to be a lot more structured.
Right. Very, very good there. I'm going to bring Andrew back on. And Andrew, we've talked a lot about this on the regular Cottage Talk show about Kevin McDonald, but I want to get your take on this because Mike Gregg was mentioning that people don't think that McDonald is a CDM, but he's a big guy. He really is a CDM, but he's a little bit more than that. He's not Rohan Ince, meaning that he was just that Dixon Atuhu type. He can also pass. He's a very good passer of the ball. But I think what Solvice is going to use him for is a CDM and potentially have someone along with him that can be that attacking force. Is that how you see McDonald's role and maybe someone playing along with him?
Kind of. It looks to me more that rather than just the straight traditional number six kind of guy who goes out there and just destroys attacks, he's looking more for have two guys who they're solid defensively, but they're more box to box and they can kind of play next to each other. So if you've got like a Tunnicliffe and a McDonald or a McDonald and
yep.
a Parker, neither of them are really traditional number sixes, but they can both play defense and they can both provide someone to the attack. And then you've got that other band right in front of them where you're going to have your central attacking midfielder and your right and left midfield attacking midfielders with lots of interchanging. So it seems to be, like a pretty fluid sort of setup without, you know, the typical number six destroyer back there. And it's probably a good way to use the talent on this team because they really don't have that one guy. And even if you get him, well, then you just have one of them. And what do you do when he can't play? You're changing the way you play again. Rather, if you can get five or six guys that can play in these multiple roles, it makes it a lot easier to rotate your squad.
Okay, So going back to, and I'm probably saying it wrong, maybe it's Josebed, I'm calling him Josebed. I could be completely wrong in the name. That would be a very good goalman on my behalf. So again, he has played the majority of the games last season as an attacking midfielder. So you see him as maybe the center of that three in front of the two.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that's probably where he is. I think you could see him at times on the right. I think Floyd Ayite has been playing there mostly in the preseason, but he could spend some time on the right in the middle. You've got Kearney on the left. You could probably put Ayite on the left when Kearney can't play. It just gives you a lot of Aluko has been playing in that role a lot in the preseason, well behind the main striker. But again,
right.
It gives you just options across the board. If one guy's hurt, right. you can just shift them around and you don't lose a whole lot, which has always been kind of an issue at Fulham over the last 3 or 4 years. They've just depended a lot on either Ross McCormack or Brian Ruiz or someone to go out and just do something amazing rather than actually have a team that's playing well together.
Okay, so you kind of see this as a fluid situation, and Aluko has played very well in that role. So I'm just saying if they bring in this player, they can mix and match where they can move around these players to best accentuate what Fulham need to do. Because it seems like, you know, again, what's great about some of the players that they brought in, that they're flexible, Andrew. So it sounds like if you bring in another talent, you can move the pieces around and not really hurt yourself. I think that's what Solvice is going for. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree. It could be team specific. It could be when you're playing against a team who doesn't have the greatest
right.
attack in the world, maybe you play Josebed in one of the two deeper central midfields, and you bring on another attacker. But again,
okay.
you're or you're playing someone who you need a little bit more defense. Well, this time you're going to move him up behind the striker, and you'll play two more defensive-minded midfielders behind him. It just gives you options without really making wholesale changes to your system.
Right. It's, you know, it's a fluid situation. It really is. You know, again, Savisa is someone that wants to play the game against the other manager. He wants to take advantage of the weaknesses of the other team. So he's going to set his team up to beat the other team in a tactical way. It's not going to be, okay, we're just sending these guys out, we're going to just do it this way. He's probably going to change it from match to match, and I think we all need to be prepared for that. It's different than McGaff. McGaff was craziness, Andrew. I think this is more going to be tactical, and what's great is that he's got players that he can mix and match with, that he can move around.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's good, because it just you don't have to. Last year, a lot of the time when they wanted to change the way they were going to play against a different team, it was going from a 4-4-2 diamond to a 4-4-3-3 to a 3-5-2 to a, you know, they were just completely changing the way they were going to play. And I really do think a lot of that may have been why Fulham's defense was so bad, is that guys just weren't able to practice enough, like in their assigned roles, because next week they could be doing something entirely different.
Now, good point there, my friend. Good point. Very, very interesting discussion today. Real quick, because I do want to talk about one other departure. I want to get your thoughts on this, and I'll go back to Max. Personally, I was disappointed by this because I'm a big fan of George Williams. He went out on loan to MK Dons. What are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, sorry. I was kind of curious to see him play this year. I've been following him for a long time. He's you know, been just on the fringes of making the first team, it seems like, for 3 or 4 years now. He was on that Wales team that had a really good Euros. But, I mean, I'm assuming that if they're sending him out alone, Slavisa just doesn't think that he's ready to do the job yet. And since he's the guy seeing these guys in training every day, I have a hard time arguing with that.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, I'm going to bring Max back on the line. Max, I want to get your thoughts about George Williams going on loan. He's a young player. I think he has huge upside. Do you think this is the right move for him to have him go on loan to MK Dons?
I had the initial same reaction as you, Russ, because I really do rate George Williams. He's a quality young player. He came. We got him from MK Dons. We got him from the academy. And he's an exciting prospect. You know, he's on the Wales team, and you mentioned that. And it's always this kind of mix we have before. Do you want to throw young players straight into the championship? Do you want to farm them out on loan, give them a little playing experience? For now, I think with all the attacking signings Slavisa has made, I think this move is probably for the best, because I think it is valuable to get some playing time immediately and develop himself at a little bit of a smaller club rather than to have him competing for first-team places and maybe being frozen out on the bench. So I think 1 year of loan is probably a good idea, and hopefully next year he can come back and be a very productive player for us.
Okay, very good, very good. I'm going to bring Andrew back on. And let's go into the Cottagers Confidential Spotlight, a couple of articles from some of the writers of Cottagers Confidential. They're writing some great stuff. Let's talk about this article, Andrew, by Thomas Erie. It's a scouting report of two potential targets for Fulham. I'm going to say his other name because I'm not going to try this name. It's Eddie Silvestri. And Steve Mooney, he goes by a different last name as well. Thomas gives you some background on these potential transfer targets for Fulham. Andrew, what are your thoughts on this article and the players involved?
I like the article a lot, and I've seen a lot of links to these two players out on Twitter and in various news things. I'm not so sure about the players. The Steve Mooney, he's in League Two. He's played mostly in League Two, only a little bit in League One. Whenever anyone's jumping up in qualities of leagues that much, it always kind of surprises me. He's not old, but he's not like super, super young either. So there's not a whole lot of potential in him. He should be hitting his peak right now. If you're bringing in just a striker for depth, I can kind of understand that move. But if you're bringing him in to be kind of your starting striker, I think you can probably do better. And it's kind of the same sort of thing with I'll just say Eddie because I cannot pronounce any of his names. It's sort of the same thing where he's in La Liga 2. I'm not sure how good the quality is. If you're only spending 200,000 euros on him, you know, what's the harm? At worst,
right.
he turns into Sekiri Matila. You take a gamble on him. If he turns out to be good, you can either sell him on or you've got a good player for cheap. If he's a bust, well, it's only 200,000 pounds. I mean, I know that's a lot to a lot of people, but, you know, in the grand scheme of Fulham's transfer budget, that's basically peanuts.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to bring on back Max. And Max, I want to get your thoughts on the article and these two players that that Thomas Erie has been talking about in his scouting report.
It's a very insightful article, but I think it says a lot about, you know, where Fulham is now. But no one's ever heard of these two players, I have to say. I have no idea who these people are. And we're scouting people from, I mean, Ligue 2, and La Liga 2. These are leagues that really Fulham should not be looking for players in, if I'm going to be honest with you. Obviously, Slavisa maybe has seen something in these players, but realistically, none of these two players are going to start for Fulham or perhaps play a very major role in the season. So I think it's probably for depth if we do sign them. And I think more likely than not, they're going to be another Sekiri Matila or Mark Fotheringham, players who never really see the light of day.
Whoa. Yeah, those are, you know, Mark Fotheringham's name I don't even want to hear about again. Very good point, though. But
yeah.
Max, you know, Andrew was mentioning this. For me, it's low risk, high reward if they bring in Silvestri, and I'll just say Eddie. If they bring in Eddie Silvestri,
yeah.
maybe it becomes like found money.
It's true. I mean, yeah, with 200,000 euros, obviously a small transfer fee compared to the inflated prices we're dealing with today, that might be a good piece of business, throw them out in some cup games. But these, to be honest with you, these players aren't the players that are going to make or break Fulham season. The players
right.
that are going to make or break Fulham season is going to be the money we reinvest in Ross McCormack.
I totally agree there. All right, I'm going to go right back to you, Max. In the article by Adam Braun-Smith and Tal the Craven Corner, because that is his column, Fulham end preseason with a victory over Crystal Palace. Adam gives his assessment of the last friendly for Fulham. All right, Max, what are your thoughts on Adam's view from this friendly?
I think it's great. I can't remember the last time we've had a preseason with so much optimism. And at this point, Ross, I remember talking to you about a month ago, right after we beat, I believe it was Preston 5-0 in Ireland. And we were
right.
saying, what a great result. You know, we're playing against championship-level teams, and we're smashing them. And then we go out here and beat Crystal Palace. We give a La Liga side, Real Betis, a run for their money. And the players, we beat Brighton, and the players are looking very good. The score lines are great. The defense is tight. And people have to take into account, this is a Premier League side. Crystal Palace have some very quick wingers and quick strikers. Adam mentioned this. Andros Townsend, Wilfred Zaha, Yannick Bolasie, probably some of the best in the business with pace. And he said that our two center has, Maddo and Collis, dealt with them brilliantly. And I think that is music to Fulham supporters' ears, because we haven't had that. We haven't had center backs and defense that has been solid. And no matter what people say, it's a preseason friendly, sure. When you beat Crystal Palace 3-1, that has to be cause for celebration, and it has to be a good omen for the new season.
Listen, I totally agree with that, and it's funny because I think some gloss over the fact earlier in the preseason, I know it was behind closed doors, Max, but they beat Tottenham Hotspur 1-0.
Yeah.
Okay,
really?
And you know, no one seems to talk about that because it was behind closed doors, but they beat Brighton, who was near the top of the division last year in the championship. They destroyed Preston North End. They held their own with Real Betis. I actually watched that match. And they've had a very successful preseason. So, yeah, I think there's a right to be a little optimistic. Don't go overboard. There's still much work to be done. And what's funny, Max, is that's why this Ross McCormack being sold, I think, is an opportunity to take us from, you know, again, at a certain level, if they spend it correctly, we go to the next level. Here's the challenge for Fulham. How do you reinvest that money? You're building a good squad. You have a chance to make it not just a good squad, but a very good squad. But it all comes down to how you spend that money, Max. And I know you agree with me there.
Yes, completely.
Okay, very good. I'm going to bring on Andrew. And, Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on Adam's article and just start talking in general about the preseason.
the preseason's got me kind of excited, and it's still kind of foreign to me. Usually in the preseason, I'm like, yeah, these games don't matter. They lose, they win, whatever. But they've just, everything they've done has looked right. Their defensive look good. Their attacks look good. They've never looked lost. And it's just very good to see that. It's been a long time since I've seen Fulham play that way in the preseason or the regular season. So I'm hoping that it carries over. I'm hoping that this isn't just all a preseason mirage. I'm still a little bit worried about the number of players that they have on the squad. They only, I think it was 22 squad numbers they gave out. And I think you really need to get closer to, 28 or 30 guys on your team to get through the season. But other than that, I don't really have much negative to say.
What's interesting, and Max brought it up in Adam's article, talking about going up against, and I see this as a huge plus, playing Crystal Palace. I know Crystal Palace are not as far along in their progression in their preseason as Fulham are. But, Adam, I'm sorry, I can't believe I called you Adam. Andrew, when you're going up against players, and you've already mentioned Bolasie, Townsend, and then, and then Zaha, and you have your young fullback, I'm going to name him Ryan Sessegnon, hold his own against Andros Townsend. On the other side, you have Dennis Odoi holding his own against a very dangerous Wilfried Zaha. It has to be cause for optimism a little bit. I don't know, again, with Ryan Sessegnon, I have a funny feeling that they're going to bring in a left back. You got to be careful with the kid, but he might start against Newcastle United. And I'm here to tell you, based on what I've seen in my own eyes and what others have seen, I think he can hold his own, believe it or not, against Newcastle United. What are your thoughts about again, what I'm sharing about the defense and playing against Crystal Palace?
Yeah, that was pretty exciting to me. I was going into that game saying, hey, if they just hold their own, look okay. But they went out and they were the better team. I know they have probably an extra week on Crystal Palace in preparation, but that's still, they were playing, a 16-year-old. Left back. And it's not just like he's a 16, almost 17. He just turned 16 a couple months ago.
That's right.
That's pretty amazing. And I agree with you that you might actually see him start with Fredericks being injured. I think it might make the most sense to move Odoi over to right back and bring in Sessegnon to play left back.
Right, because, again, we were talking about on the last show, you do have the option, Andrew, of newcomer Scott Malone, but what has Ryan Sessegnon not done that he doesn't deserve this? He deserves the opportunity, Andrew. He's played very well in the preseason, nothing against Scott Malone. But I think, this is just my opinion, I think you're going to see him at left back and Odoi at right back.
And that would be very, very exciting. I'm not sure if he would be. He might be the – I don't have to look up to see the actual ages. He might be the youngest player to ever start for Fulham, if that is the case.
Well, Matty Briggs was pretty young, so you might have to check that out.
Yeah, I know Briggs was 16 as well. I'd have to look to see what their exact birthdays were, but that would be very, very close.
Yep. All right, I got Max back on. He's in Canada, so his line did drop. Max, before we move on talking about the Crystal Palace match, the most exciting part of watching the highlights, listening to the match, because, again, I only got highlights, and talking to others that were there, was the play of the fullbacks. And I really want to talk about specifically Ryan Sessegnon, just turned 16 years old, and he held his own against Andros Townsend. And then you have on the other side, I'm listening to a battle on the radio between Dennis Odoi and Wilfried Zaha, and we know how good Zaha is. So for me, the best thing to come out of that match was the play of the fullbacks. Are you there, Matt?
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay. The thing about Sessegnon is he's 16 years old, and I just turned 17. It's amazing. The first time I've followed a player who's younger than me. It's an interesting experience. It's amazing to see a player with such passion. And both our fullbacks have that. I remember Odoi, there was a clip of him from the Betis match or the Brighton match. I can't remember. But he's like furiously chasing down a loose ball, putting in every last effort and winning a corner. And that's kind of a passion that's been missing from Fulham. I mention this all the time, but the heart has been sucked out of the Fulham side past couple of years. And these are two hungry players, very pacey, very willing to defend and attack. two fullbacks who can perform brilliantly. And another young player who I'd like to mention, who I don't know if we talked about a lot, is Steve Humphries, the young striker, who's also been banging in a lot of goals, and he's also been impressive. So this is why I have so much optimism for the new season, however misfounded that may be. It's because the young players are finally starting to come through, and the preseason results have been stellar.
Right, and very good point. And before we move on and go to the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable, I'm just going to go right back to you. Because you talked about some of the characteristics of Dennis Adoy, and I've seen it from other players. I feel that they're taking on the characteristics of the Fulham head coach, Slavisa Jokanović, because that, to me, is a very good sign. A team really does take on that aura of the head coach. They play like their head coach. You know, we could go back to Kit, and I thought Fulham played a little bit like Kit's personality. And I see Fulham now transitioning themselves, Max, to be taking on the personality of Slavisa Jokanović. Do you see that as well?
I completely agree. Slavisa is a fighter. He's always going to go down punching, and the team, it's perfect for the championship because it's a rough and tumble league. And people forget, he showed it with Watford. He did get Watford promoted, so he knows why he's fine in the preseason to get the whole.
Okay, you're breaking up a little bit there, Max. I know you're driving, so I'm just going to drop you for a second. Just try back in a little bit. And Andrew, I'm going to go back to you because again, this just popped in my head while we're talking about this because Max brought up talking about Dennis Adoy and the way that he's fighting. And I'm not just seeing it from him. I'm seeing it from Floyd Ayite. I'm seeing it from Sonny Aluko and several other players. I think that Fulham are now starting to create this identity, and the identity is really of their head coach.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think you've kind of started to clean out a lot of the guys who were here when things were really, really bad. There's not a lot of guys left who are around McGath. There's not a lot of guys left who are here around Martin Yule. And the ones who were are kind of, guys that didn't really have that effort problem that some of the other people did. So I think it's kind of turning over a new page. And I think this Fulham squad is going to be a lot different than the way we've seen squads the past couple of years.
I totally agree with that. And that's what excites me. I can just see a different type of squad. We'll see how good they really are. And the transfer window is certainly still open and they now have money to spend. Let's see if they could take it to that next level with some new signings. All right, Andrew, like I said, unfortunately, we're having some technical difficulties with Max. He is in a car in Canada, so he might not be back with us. Hopefully, he can try to get back to us soon. But in the meantime, I have some topics for you. Let's start here. We've already talked a little bit about this player, so I just want to ask you, how much of a loss will Ryan Fredericks be as he could be out to 3 months total? He could be out for a total of 3 months. That's a long time. So how much of a loss could he potentially be for Fulham?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what they decide to do. They do have options. I mean, Thomas Kalas could slide over and play right back. Does hurt you in the center, I think, a little bit. Adoy obviously can play right or left back, so you could move him over to right back. And then you have you could either play Sessegnon or Malone or even Tim Ream over at left back. So they have some options, but I do think it's kind of It does hurt because I do think that they really do want both fullbacks attacking. And if you're playing Ream or Kalas as one of the fullbacks, they're not going to be so much contributing in attack. They're much more going to be a stay-at-home defender, which does change the way you want to play. I don't know enough about Malone to know how he can do on the left side over a long period of time. Having Sessegnon, while he's got all the talent in the world, it could just be a little bit too much too soon for him. You just never know. And I did look that up. He will be 14 days older than Matt Briggs was when he got his first Fulham appearance.
Wow. Very young and very talented. And he's got a serious, bright future ahead of him. And like I said, Andrew, we might see him on Friday. I'm looking forward to the match. And we might see him at left back, which would be very interesting. And I don't think he'd be awed by it. I think he's already shown that he can play at this level. Listen, he was going against Premier League players, and he held his own, which is a very good sign. All right, right back to you. What's now, we've already talked a little bit about it, but I want to get specifics from you. What positions do you feel Fulham need to bolster in the transfer window as it's still open?
I think you probably need one more defender, either a guy who can play, either a guy who's a center back who could play one of the two fullback positions in a pitch, kind of like a Tim Ream type guy, or to get a more of a fullback who can slide over and provide some cover at center back. I think if you're playing, it looks like we're playing two center backs at a time. Having Nadal and Kallas be your number one and number two with Ream and Stearman as three or four, that's not bad. It's not really that bad at all. But, I mean, I still would like a little bit of cover just for injuries. And obviously the Ryan Fredericks thing makes getting a little bit more cover at fullback bigger. I still think that they'd like to have one more central midfielder, more of the deep-lying guy, the more box-to-box guy. You've got now McDonald, Parker, Tunnicliffe, and Christensen. For those four positions, I would like, and then some of the guys who are playing more attacking can probably slide back. But I'd like probably one more guy to fill that role and just provide some cover, and then some more right-sided midfielder who also can play the other attacking roles. As the guy we mentioned from La Liga probably would fit that just perfectly, and then possibly another striker. If McCormick goes, I think you need to bring in one striker. It doesn't need to be, you know, a McCormick style player, but you're going to need just that at depth. So that'd be a striker, a right-sided attacking mid, a center mid, and one defender. So that would be four more players, I think.
Right. And if I can remember correctly, in the manager reaction, the head coach reaction, Slavica said he needed four to five more players. So by all accounts, I think you're kind of close to the numbers. We'll see if those positions come through, but I tend to agree with most of what you said, Andrew. All right, let's move on. Let's go to predictions. It's time for predictions. I'll give my prediction along with you. Who wins the Sky Bet Championship, Andrew?
I just have a hard time seeing anyone but Newcastle winning. They're not really blowing up their squad. They're adding to it.
They're adding to it.
They could. Get a transfer ban in December, as it seemed like everyone in the championship got one last year for violating financial fair play. But they've still got, you know, a world-class manager there. The only thing that gives me a little pause is Newcastle's had really great players for 4 or 5 years now, and they just have always been on the brink of relegation in the Premier League, and I could never figure out why. And there's just something wrong there, and I don't know if they've figured out what it is and fixed it. But just on paper, I don't see how they don't win the league.
On paper, they should win the league. The additions that they've added are tremendous, and I'll be doing a preview show tomorrow. And, you know, it's funny because I was trying to think of their best addition, and the one that scares me the most for the match on Friday night is Matt Ritchie, originally from Bournemouth. He gave Fulham fits 2 years ago, and he's now with Newcastle. Apparently, it's been reported, I don't know if it's a done deal yet, but Mo Diami could be going to them as well, and they have Dwight Gayle. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Grant Hanley, that Fulham were interested at center back. They've added very well. So I understand why you're going there. I don't have them winning the league. I actually have them coming in second. Believe it or not, I'm going to have Derby County winning the league. Derby County has been knocking at the door for a very long time. Nigel Pearson is now their manager. We know what Nigel Pearson's like. I think he's going to get them prepared and ready to go. I'm actually going to go with Derby County. That's going to be my pick. You're going with Newcastle. Who do you have for second?
It's not going to be much of a surprise. I was going to pick Derby County for my second place team. I thought they've been breaking on the door. They were probably, other than Brighton, they're the best team remaining. Yep. Last year, and I think Brighton's going to take a step back. They seem to be doing things with a little bit of smoke and mirrors last year. I was never quite sure how they were doing it. So I think Derby County is going to be the second place team.
Okay, very good. And we're just flip flopping here. Andrew, I wrote down Newcastle United, so I'm going with Newcastle United. I got a funny feeling about Derby County. Anyone that knows me knows that I have a lot of friends that support Derby County. My good friend Andy Buckley Taylor. If Fulham can't win and can't get back for promotion, I'd like to see my friend get there. So yeah, I guess you could say a part of me is definitely pulling for them to win the league. I want to see them win the league. If it's not going to be Fulham, I'd like to see Derby County. So that's why I went with them. I also think that they're built for it now. But Newcastle United, I just don't know if it's all going to gel together when you need it to gel together, which is early. Derby County have been playing together for a long time in the championship. There is an adjustment. Will they be able to adjust fast enough to win the league? I don't know. That's why I'm going with Derby County first and Newcastle United second. But I definitely think that Newcastle United have a very good chance to earn automatic promotion, but I just have them second. All right, Andrew, let's go to the three teams that you have being relegated. Who are they?
The three teams I have getting relegated, I have Burton Albion getting relegated, only because I don't really know that much about them. They just came up from League One. They play in a very small stadium. I know Nigel Clough is their manager, but it's just, I think a team that small is going to struggle. I think Rotherham is probably going to get relegated this year. They've been on the cusp of it a few times, and I haven't followed them that closely, but it doesn't look like they've done that much to improve their chances this year. And the third one is actually going to be a surprise. I'm actually going to say Aston Villa gets relegated just because they were one of the worst teams I've ever seen play last year. They did nothing right. And I don't know that they fixed it. Maybe the new ownership comes in and they turn it around. But we've seen firsthand what can happen when a previous owner just lets things die and a new owner with money comes in and just doesn't realize quite how deep the rot is. And
sure.
I could see them having a very, very similar season to Fulham's first season in the championship, where they're just struggling to stay up.
So you actually see Ross McCormack actually being in a similar situation, which would be fascinating, because everyone knows that Ross McCormack is going to score them goals. He's going to score them goals. Again, the deal isn't completed yet, but we have a strong feeling. Obviously, Fulham have accepted a bid. They put it on the website, so that tells you that the deal is going to go through, Andrew. But I've been thinking the same thing about Aston Villa. I don't have them being relegated, but I think they're going to struggle more than they think. Because partially that they spent all this money on Ross McCormack, just like we did, and there were so many other areas that Fulham needed to address, and they did not know how to really handle the championship. They were not prepared for the championship. I don't think Aston Villa is prepared for the championship, Andrew. So I understand why you're picking them.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing. I see a lot of similarities between Fulham's last year in the Premier League and their last year. And Aston Villa's defense was just horrible last year. They just seemed like they didn't care to play defense. And I haven't seen them do a whole lot to fix that. They could end up with a type of season like Fulham had last year, where they're close to leading the league in goals and they're close to giving up the most goals.
Yeah. Honestly, if there's one of the teams that has come down that I don't fear, it's Aston Villa. I fear Norwich. I definitely fear Newcastle United, but I don't fear Aston Villa because I see where you're going on this. I was thinking about that in my three, but I didn't want to go that far. Partially because they do have McCormack. I think McCormack will keep them up, but I think they're going to struggle. I think they're going to learn how difficult the championship is, and I think that's going to be hard for those Aston Villa supporters. I know several of them. I think they're going to experience what Fulham supporters did 2 years ago. It was hard, and I think Aston Villa is going to see how hard it actually is. My three are Barnsley, Burton Albion, and I'm going with Rotherham too. I think Rotherham are now going to go down. They've been cheatering lately. So have Fulham, to be honest. Last year, Fulham were 20th, so I would understand. And I've seen several people make predictions that have Fulham being relegated, and funny because I think the people that are making it don't have no idea what they've done in the preseason, but that's fine. I understand based on last season, why people would pick Fulham. But Rotherham is just someone that I just don't think have enough to stay in the league for a third year. They've done it for two. I just don't think they're strong enough. So I have them going down, like I mentioned, with Barnsley and Burton Albion. All right, my friend. It's time. It's time to predict Fulham. I'm curious your thoughts here. I will do my prediction. I'm going to be doing it on our prediction show coming up after this episode. We're recording this Wednesday afternoon, East Coast time, where I am a little earlier Pacific, but I will be sharing my prediction as well on that show. But I want yours first. What is your prediction for Fulham this season? What place do you have them at?
I think I've got them probably finishing in the top 10. If the championship is like it is last year, there's a really big difference between the top six and everyone else.
Correct.
The way it was last year, it was basically from 17 to 7. The goal differentials were all just within a few of each other. And then there was a big jump up to sixth. And I think Fulham's going to be in that pack this year. They're not going to be in the 18 to 24 group that they were in last year. I think they're going to be solidly in that, you know, that middle group. And if everything breaks right, they could be challenging for fifth or sixth. But I don't think they'll do there. I think they'll keep our hopes up that they could get there till pretty late in the season, but I think they probably finish somewhere between 9th and 12th, but I'd say probably 9th, 8th is about where they'll probably end up.
Now, Andrew, that is very realistic. You took a realistic approach to this, and I see where you're going on that, and I could see why many fans would approach it that way. It's definitely realistic. They should be a team that should be hovering anywhere, say, you know, 7th, through 12th. I can definitely see if someone said all the way back to 12th, because I think it's that even. Like you said, the goal differential shows you that it's extremely close. It could jump that much from 7th all the way to, like you mentioned, even 17th. That's how close it is. So I could see them being in that pack. I don't see Fulham in any relegation scrap. I could be wrong. I know people are predicting it right now because of what happened with Ross McCormack. I think they're going to spend the money. I am going to be extremely optimistic, Andrew, with my prediction. You said if everything falls right, you could see fifth or sixth. I'm going to say that everything's going to fall right, and they're going to end fifth. I'm predicting fifth because I think that they now have a base to build around for Slavisa Jokanović. You now have the money. This is such a huge opportunity, Andrew. If they spend the money wisely this month, I say that they can get fifth. The caveat is if they don't spend it wisely, then I think they will be in the pack that you're saying, somewhere between 7th and 12th. But I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to say that they're going to spend the money wisely, and I'm going to say fifth.
Yeah, I could totally agree with that. And I think that what really will be interesting is what happens, like, if they're in December, they are 6th, 5th, 7th, they're somewhere in that range going
right
into the winter window. They could really say go like what Middlesbrough basically did last year. It's like, we're going to spend the money, we're going to go for it, and if we don't make it, well, we'll deal with the financial fair play issues when that comes.
Exactly. And that's, you know, listen, that's always a risk. But if they are hovering in December, like you mentioned, say they are ninth, I have a feeling that they're going to go for it. That's a gut feeling, like you said, because they're hungry to gain promotion. What's interesting, Andrew, and part of the reason why I'm going for fifth is Jokanović, not just him as a manager, but his ambition as a manager, because this man doesn't want them to get fifth or sixth, to just get in the playoffs. Andrew, I think he wants them to get automatic promotion. This guy is extremely motivated, and I think that's why he's so upset, and you hear it in his reaction. He expects high. He doesn't expect okay. He expects high. He wants to go for it. He wants, I truly believe that Jokanović wants Fulham to be promoted automatically this season. So part of the reason why I'm going with fifth is his drive and determination, and to make sure that Fulham get the players that he needs before the window shuts. So part of this is based on him, not him as a manager, but his ambition. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, that definitely makes sense.
Okay, very good.
Yeah,
all right,
like
my
friend.
I'm sorry.
You never know, because I was going to say Brighton in 14-15 finished 20th with a negative 10 goal differential, and then somehow
right.
didn't even seem to make that many moves. All of a sudden they were third with a plus 30 goal differential just in
That's
one
right.
season. So it's not unheard of for someone to make a jump like that.
No, it's not, and I've used the Brighton example, and people get sick and tired of me using the Brighton example, but it's a valid one. I've also seen other teams jump up from year to year. I saw Sheffield Wednesday start to do that. They've now made the move. Derby County did it about 4 to 5 years ago. Teams start to make the move. You can make the jump from 20th to top six. Believe it or not, it's been done. It's been done a few times. So I'm an optimistic person, my friend, and I think we have an optimistic head coach that is not going to settle for anything less. So it's like this with me. I just think that he wants it so badly that he's going to do everything he can to get there. So that's why I think he's almost going to will them all the way. So that's why I'm going with fifth. So that's my prediction, and people can take shots at me for being optimistic, and that's fine. I have a very good feeling about this season. Even with McCormack leaving, I see McCormack leaving, Andrew, as the window opening and the opportunity is there for them to make the move. Now they have the money to make the move farther along in their progression. I think they're going to be good. They might be very good now if they spend that money wisely. All right. Before we wrap up the show, any final thoughts, my friend?
I'm just really excited for Friday. It's going to be great. I've already got another writer, Michael Stanton, from the site. He and I are going to go to a bar on our lunch breaks to watch the game. And it's been a long time since I've been able to watch a Fulham game in a bar. So
I'm excited. I'm excited as well. It's on here. It's on here in the United States on BN Sports. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Before we go, I'll be making my prediction on the prediction show, so I won't make my prediction. I won't be talking to you until after the match, Andrew. Give me a prediction for Friday night.
I still think that this is going to end up being a very, very close game. I think Newcastle is going to struggle a little bit with nerves and just not really being having been in the championship. And the fact that Fulham are going to be playing – they could be playing as many as 10 different guys than played for them at any time last year. I think that's going to be hard for them to scout and prepare for. So I think they're going to struggle a bit more than they normally would. But I also think that Slavisa might be a little bit more cautious than he normally would, going up against what could be one of your hardest fixtures of the year, not wanting to start things off on a really bad foot, because we've seen Fulham fans when – something bad happens at home, things can go sour really, really fast. So I think both teams are going to be kind of cagey, and it would not shock me to see something like a 1-1 draw come out of this. So that's probably what I'm going to predict is a 1-1 draw.
Okay, and for you, if they came out of this with a result, which would be just a result, a draw here instead of a victory, would that be encouraging to you?
I think it would, because like I said, this is going to be one of the hardest fixtures of the year, because I mean Newcastle on paper, again only on paper, they should be one of the best talent wise they're the best team, so you know that those two games against them are going to be the hardest games of the year. And most of these Newcastle players, a lot of them have played at Craven Cottage before, so it's not new to them. I think that that's going to be a hard game, and if you can get a result out of that, just build on that going forward, I think that would be good.
Okay, very good. All right. Before we go, my final thoughts, just talking about the show Cottage Talk. We have several shows lined up. We just finished this one, the Cottagers Confidential Roundtable. We will be having a prediction show. I will be talking to a blogger who blogs about Newcastle tomorrow, and then we'll also be having a preview show. So there's going to be a good amount of content for the season right before it begins, and we'll continue to have many, many shows. All right, Andrew. Again, thank you very much for joining me. I do want to thank Max. Max was in Canada on vacation with his family, so unfortunately he had to drop off. I also want to thank Will Paul. We'll try calling in. We struggled with his connection, but I want, well, if you're listening, I want to thank you for joining me, and anyone that is listening late, you know, just want to say sorry about the connection we had with Will's line. Definitely wanted to get Will on, but we were having problems with his connection, but it was only on for a short period of time, so hopefully you will listen all the way through. But it is time to go, my friend. It's time to wrap up this show. For Andrew, Max, and Will, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, my friend. Have a great day.